Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Callum Borchers. Valentine's Day is a time to celebrate love and the ones you love, be they significant others or friends and family. And these days you can look for romance in all kinds of places, a dating app or a website, social media, maybe even at work or a night out. But that doesn't mean dating has gotten any easier. In fact, in a world where millions of suitors are at your fingertips, just a right swipe away, dating has become complicated. Now, I've been married for 10 years and haven't been on a first date since 2005. Happy Valentine's Day, darling. The dating game has changed a lot since I was in it, so I've brought in some folks who know a lot more than I about the complications of modern-day dating. Radio Boston producers Paris Alston and Eve Zukoff. Hello to both of you.
Hi, Callum. Thanks so much for having us.
Hi, Callum.
We're also joined by Meredith Goldstein, who is behind the Boston Globe's Love Letters column for advice and also the podcast. Hello, Meredith.
Hello.
And listeners, we want to hear from you, too. In the age of dating apps, what's the dating scene like for you? What questions do you have about how to navigate it? Have certain apps or other ways of meeting people worked well for you? Are you frustrated by dating? Maybe you're single by choice. And if you're in a relationship, how did you meet your significant other? Well, you can call us at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK or tweet us at Radio Boston. All right, Paris and Eve, you're both single, which is totally okay, despite what the Valentine's Day sensation would tell you. But tell us what dating has been like for you. Paris, let's begin with you.
Yeah, so it's been complicated, to say the least, Callum. And I'll start with, I broke up with my ex-boyfriend a little over a year ago. We had a really great relationship, but the breakup, it lasted forever. And it kind of happened in stages. At first was like, you know, there was a bit of a rift, and I sensed that it was coming. And then there were like this stage of breadcrumbs that he gave me for weeks where he just wasn't telling me what's going on. And, you know, I followed those breadcrumbs thinking they were going to lead back to us being together again. But eventually he like ghosted me. And that was just so frustrating.
All right. Quick glossary of terms here, Paris. Breadcrumbs and ghosting. Give us quick definitions.
For sure. So with breadcrumbs, you know, think about leaving a trail of breadcrumbs behind you, hoping
someone will follow. Hansel and Gretel style.
Okay. Exactly. You're not going to get the whole sandwich, but, you know, just leave some breadcrumbs out. And yeah, you know, keep giving people a little bit of what they want, but not the whole thing. And so that's exactly what it was. And with ghosting, I mean, it's like you talk to someone and they're really attentive and communicative. And then all of a sudden they drop off the face of the earth. You text them, they don't answer. That you call them, they never call you back. And, you know, for me, it's like I could see that happening in a casual dating situation, but this was someone I was in a committed relationship with. And so it was very rude. And then he, you know, he would resurface every now and then, and he was kind of orbiting me. This is another very millennial term for you here, Callum. It was doing this thing where he would kind of like watch me. He would watch my Snapchat story and be in my like general, you know, orbit space, but he still would not talk to me, which was like, this is so tempting because you have one foot in and one foot out. I'm like, what do you want from me? And eventually we did kind of reconnect and we made amends and, you know, but I was like, why are you coming back? And he was doing this thing where he wanted to check in on me. And I'm like, why are you checking in? And I almost wanted to be friends with him and be nice about it. But then I was like, Drake said, be nice for what? So, like, why would I do that?
All right, I'm going to call this haunting when the ghost returns.
I like that.
I'm copywriting it right now.
And they always come back.
Meredith, do you hear this now? You take the advice. You get some calls for your podcast. You get the people who write in for your columns. Ghosting, breadcrumbs, orbiting. Are these issues that
come up? All, you know, and the interesting thing is they're new words, but they're not new concepts. If you go back and read advice columns from 100 years ago, ghosting happened. It was even that much easier to ghost, right? It's like, where did he go? No, literally, where did he go?
Because there's
like no social media to tell you. So, you know, I think some of these feelings of, you know, detachment and breakups, they're universal, right? But we have new lingo for them. Now orbiting, I think, is very specific to now in that this idea that you can watch someone's social media stories and they can see you watching. So it's like, I see you. You see me seeing you, but we will not communicate, right? It's like watching somebody from across a restaurant and no one ever really truly making eye contact. So I think that can be very frustrating, can make it harder to let go and to truly move on.
Definitely.
You're all making me glad that I wrapped up dating
like,
career in the
right.
pre-social media.
Never let go.
Eve, I'm turning over to you next. What has your experience been like in the modern day dating scheme?
God, how much time do you have? okay, well, I feel like in my experience, I do not meet people in real life. Like, do I go to the grocery store? Do I linger there? Do I go to a coffee shop? I don't know. I feel like I'm not seeing people or having conversations with people that are like where the sparks are flying. But I think that my dating life is mostly happening on apps. And the longer I'm on these apps, I feel like the more there's the paradox of choice. Because at some point you can only see so many like tall, scruffy, bearded brunettes holding a fish before you're like, okay, you're all the same.
And they are often holding a fish, which is a phenomenon that I think must be discussed, and the listeners must know that so many men are holding fish.
I've read about this. Yes. It's
like
a sort of a primal
thing,
right?
Sitting with their nephew, you assume they're their nephew, but you're like, I don't know, did you find a kid?
Yeah, there's a child photo, or perhaps a photo with 10 people, mm-hmm. so you have to figure out who is the person.
It's
so really,
a
apps are, yeah, a lot of fun games.
But I think it's also, at some point, it's like, is this hurting me? Because I feel like at what point do I become so fatigued, so desensitized to these eventually identical looking people? And is using these apps, is it becoming an ineffective way to look for and feel like I'm doing something when really I'm not? Mm. You know, and I wonder if these apps didn't exist, would I be actually going to a coffee shop and taking my headphones out and actually looking in the grocery store aisle, and would that change my prospects?
You know, when I think about love letters, and now that column's 10 years old, had you asked me the most common problem 10 years ago, it would have been snooping. It would have been couples breaking into each other's technology, which is not legal, I think, so don't do that. You know, breaking passwords and hacking. In 2019, it is dating fatigue. And I do think that is something specifically related to apps, because even back in my day, when I started dating, there was online dating, but there weren't apps, which meant that you could check your computer before bed, and you're checking it one time. You can be on an app all day and all night. So when you're not on that app, you feel like you're not doing the work. And dating begins to feel like a job. And I think when people talk about dating fatigue these days, they're talking about the fact that they can be dating, in quotes, 24 hours a day. It's always available to you. It always feels like something you should be doing.
All right. Mm-hmm. Radio Boston producers Paris Alston and Eve Zukoff, thank you so much for opening up yourselves to us today and sharing your experiences. We really appreciate it.
Thank you for listening, Callum.
Thank you.
And Meredith.
And listeners, now we're hoping it will be your turn to open up a little bit. Meredith is going to stick around and take some questions. And you can give us a ring at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. And we're going to open up first with Helen Marie calling in from Shrewsbury. Happy Valentine's Day, Helen Marie. What is your question, or what has your experience been?
Happy Valentine's Day. Thank you. I actually have a comment and a story to share about my own life. When I was 47 years old, 3 years ago, I was a single mom for about 13 years, never dated at all. And my 17-year-old son said to me, "Mom, I think you should go online, try to find a partner." I was very skeptical and said, "Oh, no, never would I do that." Took me about 3 months to decide, okay, maybe I should, since I only really go to church and the library, maybe this is a good way. So I signed up, I put in all my information on CatholicMatch.com. It's a place where I felt safe to go and matched my own, you know, spirituality. Put all my information in, gave myself 9 months, and said, on the ninth month, if I don't find anybody, it's not meant to be. And on the very day of the ninth month when I went to cancel my subscription, I saw my husband, who is now my husband. I saw his picture pop up and we connected. And we've been happily, happily married for 3 years. And it's an amazing miracle story. And we're both elated with our marriage.
Well, so congratulations, Helen Marie. And thank you
thank
so much
you.
For the call. Meredith, I'm curious about that. That's an interesting story, because Helen Marie is talking about she was a churchgoer anyway. In theory, she was meeting people who might be good matches, and yet she had to go online to CatholicMatch.com to actually make the connection. Do you hear stories like that?
Oh, I do. And I hear from many people who will say that they go out to a bar or to a club, and what they see is a bunch of people on their phones doing Tinder. Right? So even in person, we are still interfacing in that way. And, you know, it certainly expands a community. You might not find someone in your specific church, but you might find someone in a different church. So, you know, I think that what I try to tell people is do both. One doesn't replace the other. If you're online dating, don't let that be it, but be open to it.
So as I mentioned at the top, you've got the Love Letters podcast.
Yes.
And the second season is all about how you meet someone.
Yes, it's so hard. The first season was about breakups. And as we just heard, breakups could be very difficult. And then I thought, well, we need a prequel. You can't get dumped until you meet somebody, right? So we wanted to spend an entire season, you know, talking about ways in which we meet. You know, is the best place to meet in person? How do you navigate dating fatigue? What happens if you meet someone in the office? So we've really tried to hit every part of the meeting someone process and hopefully to give people hope.
All right, let's take another call. Rama is calling from Gloucester. I hope I'm pronouncing your name right. And what is your question or comment on this Valentine's Day?
Hi, yes, happy Valentine's Day, everyone. Yeah, my comment is, I think Meredith just touched on it, and I would strongly, I don't know, agree and disagree with so many different things. The best place in my experience to meet someone is indeed in person. I've tried the dating apps, you know, there's plenty of fish, Tinder, plenty of wasted time, actually, for me. But I'm not a gadget guy. I'm a live life in person guy. The best way to live life really is in person. It's hard to live in this world nowadays for someone over 50, shall we say. And it's very, very frustrating because it seems like people, women, whatever, think it's safer or somehow more efficient to meet people in person, but just so much wasted time because you really don't know someone until you're in, you know, in front of them in person. The best place to meet someone is anywhere, outdoors, outside of the home, anywhere, unless someone you're lucky enough to have someone come knocking at your door and ring your doorbell. Outside, get outside, get off the gadget. Please.
I mean, it certainly works for some. I will say that for people who might be shy and introverted, apps have allowed them to seek out partners in a great way. So if you're someone who likes to approach somebody in person, you'll probably meet someone great who likes to be approached. But again, I think, you know, there's no one right way, as we have learned through this podcast.
Rama, thanks for the call. And to Meredith's point, there are lots of people who find great efficiency in the online dating world. And for more on that point, I want to bring in another voice. Joseph Riegel is an associate professor of communication studies at my alma mater, Northeastern University. And he recently wrote about how, in a quest for the perfect person, some people are taking a computer hacking approach to dating. He wrote this for The Conversation. And he joins us now via Skype. Hello, Professor. Happy Valentine's Day.
Hi, Callum. Thank you very much.
So how are people doing it? I mean, explain this phenomenon of sort of hacking the dating world. How exactly are people trying to optimize their search for love?
Well, there's a couple of ways you can go about it, but it really is about bringing that systematic sort of approach of seeing things as a system with moving parts, things that can be optimized, things that can be crawled, and you can pull in lots of data, and then you can target people in very specific ways. So, for example, Amy Webb, who calls herself a data futurist, she wrote a book and she also had a very popular TED Talk where she spoke of how she was starting to feel antsy because a relationship had just ended and she wanted to start a family and she was going about it all the wrong way. And some of the things that she did learn was by creating a lot of fake accounts of the guy, of the sort of guys that she would want to marry. And then she would have those fake male accounts interact with women. And then she could see who the most successful women were, and then she could copy their style.
These are like the trolls that we've been reading about in election hacking.
This is not an honest date. And what do you win at that point, right? To emulate,
What she won was what works well. So, for instance, one of the insights she learned is that she had copied and pasted stuff from her resume into her dating profile, and she realized that didn't work. And what she did realize is people tended to do well with optimistic, they showed a little bit of shoulder, and they kept it very short because apparently smart people like to write very long profiles and messages, but those things don't tend to work so well.
And Joe, this is kind of corny, but you know, I was just at a wedding over the weekend, and a theme that keeps coming up, you hear a lot at these weddings when people do find each other, is what they love is the imperfections about each other. I mean, is there something fundamentally flawed about this idea of finding the perfect person through some kind of digital optimization?
I think there is. So Eve mentioned the paradox of choice, and that's the idea that when you have lots of choices available to you, it actually can make you more anxious and more upset because you think, maybe I just missed the perfect one. So I think we've always had the tendency to think, oh, who is the perfect one? But when you take this data analytic approach to dating, you're thinking, maybe the perfect one is just one more data point away. And you might never be willing to settle, or even if you do settle, and I don't mean to say that in a derogatory term, settling, but maybe you're always thinking maybe someone else better is right around the corner. And my concern is that when we think of each other as data points and the task is to find the perfect one, it really ignores an important part of relationships, which is it's a negotiation. We grow together.
Always one data point away. What a synopsis of our age. Joseph Riegel, Associate Professor of Communication Studies at Northeastern. Thank you so much for joining us via Skype.
My pleasure.
You can find a link to his piece in The Conversation at RadioBoston.org. Meredith, let's go to one more caller. Mm-hmm. We have a story about a long-distance relationship, which I think is increasingly a scenario that we encounter in this very mobile age. Haley is calling in from Somerville. Haley, what's your story?
Hi. So I'm Haley, and I'm actually a university student, and I met my significant other while studying abroad, actually. So we met in Hong Kong, and I just wanted to share that we've been together for over a year and that long distance can really be worth it. And it's been really fun having a cross-cultural relationship. He's originally from Malaysia, and I'm from the U.S. So, yeah, for anyone, for what it's worth, just having an open mind, and it's always worth it when you find the right person.
Sounds expensive. Yep. That's the one thing I hear about long distance.
We only see each other like once a year so far.
And perhaps that is also a recipe for relationship success, just a once a year visit.
Haley, how do you make it work?
Yes, we talk every day.
I assume you have to rely heavily on technology to stay in touch.
Oh, yeah, definitely. You know, because the time zone difference is actually really convenient. It's about 13 hours. So he tucks me in every night, and then I call him, you know, to like say good morning to him. Like, yeah, it's pretty convenient. But he just got his visa to the U.S. so he can come to my graduation in the spring. So really looking forward to that.
I love that.
Well, congratulations on relationship success so far, Haley, and good luck. Meredith, what a great synopsis there of a way that you have sort of something in, it begins with an in real life relationship and then relies on technology
and then becomes,
to keep it going.
Right. And then if only, a reverse app for that.
That's our show for today. Radio Boston is a production of 90.9 WBUR, Boston's NPR news station. Meredith Goldstein, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
She is the Love Letters columnist for the Boston Globe.
My favorite day of the year.
Host of the podcast by the same name. Our show is produced by Jamie Bologna, Chris Siderick, Paris Alston, Zoe Mitchell, and Eve Zukoff, who you heard from today. Tim Skog is our technical director, and our executive producer is Hitesh Hathi. I'm Callum Borchers. Join us again tomorrow for more Radio Boston.